Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on Lulz, we're inviting a man who's always begging this program to have more drama. And he finally said, I've had enough of it. I'll just create the drama myself and announce my retirement from NBA DFS. I'm, of course, talking about Petty Theft, one of the legends in the NBA DFS space for a long time. So we're going to get kind of hear from him on why he is stepping away, what that means for the games, what he's going to be doing with his time, and all of that good stuff today on Lulz with Pete and Brick.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, Travis, aka Petty Theft, it's been a while since we've had you on the show, although we always enjoy seeing you pop up in the comments. How you been doing?
Doing pretty good. A lot less stress not playing DFS NBA.
I bet. Brian, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on again, buddy.
And I think, Petty, like, the thing that's kind of bullshit is, like, you do this whole retirement thing and then you win an NFL contest. Was it this past weekend for $200K? That doesn't seem like retirement to me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I have no business winning either. I think all my lineups are pretty dead. And then I've looked at, you know, the late slate and everything went my way, and then including the Sunday football game where everybody kind of fell apart somehow.
So, like, part of the reason you're retiring from DFS, NBA DFS, is because of the time commitment. I assume you're just not putting in that level of time to NFL, and that's why it's still viable for you to play?
NFL takes me about an hour and a half a week. NBA takes me far, far greater than that. So I use my time a little more wisely now, it seems.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, unpack for people. I mean, you talked about it a little bit on your Twitter post, and I'll pull that up here on screen, but why don't you let people know kind of what went into that decision?
Yeah, you know, I came in this season unsure if I wanted to play or not. You know, I coached basketball as well at high school, assistant coach at a varsity level. So I knew if I played DFS basketball, I would have to cut down on that because our practices are literally from 2:30 to 4. Most days, and obviously the West Coast locks at 4. So I wouldn't be able to devote much time to that. And on top of that, I had a child 4 days into the NBA season. So I played the first 3 days of NBA DFS like a wild person. And then I was in the hospital for the next 4 or 5 days after that. And it kind of made me realize that I don't really enjoy doing the NBA DFS thing as much as I thought I did. So after that, got home, I played another 3 days. I actually was winning this year. It wasn't like, you know, I was getting my ass kicked and I was like, this is not for me anymore. I was winning, and then had to go back to the hospital for a couple more days. And then, I decided to move on from there. The time was too much. You know, I have two kids now. I don't need to grind for the money anymore. So it just felt like it was the right time to move on.
Yeah. So what can you put, like, I guess you mentioned for NFL and that it's a lot longer for NBA. Like, can you ballpark at how many hours? Like, were you approaching chess is okay levels? What kind of hours were you putting in?
So I think there's two answers. There's one where, like, I'm doing purely DFS stuff where, you know, I'm researching, I'm putting lineups and all that stuff. And then there's also watching the games, which you don't have to watch the games, but I enjoy watching the games. And I also think you can learn some stuff from it. Obviously, it's not the best usage of your time, but I do think you can learn some stuff. So if you include watching the games, I would say in my peak, 80 hours a week, easy.
Wow.
You know, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., I was very likely on my computer 7 days a week. I didn't take any days off during my peak. And I feel like that was part of my edge too, because I feel like when I took a couple days off, I would completely forget about, you know, kind of what had been going on. And I feel like I lost my momentum. So I think I missed maybe 2 or 3 days the whole season during my peak.
Man, that is that. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Well, I want to know what that looks like. 7 o'clock, you wake up, brush your teeth, sit out and to put the Bulls game on.
No, I'd go on. I do my research, right? I go on Popcorn Machine, just kind of review what happened the night before. But when you're that locked in and you're watching all the games, you know, and tracking on play-by-play, I love ESPN play-by-play. I'd always look at that too. I kind of knew what would happen, but I still just want to review and make sure I had the right ideas of what happened and then start the next day, you know. Because I didn't use the websites as much, like the ETRs of the world on that, I don't have to wait till, you know, they put out their stuff to start my research. I have a bunch of other stuff I could do before that to get started.
Yeah, and then refresh. I think you might have mentioned it before. Were you generating your own projections, like when you say you're doing this research, or is this research then informing how you're going to like tweak other publicly available projections?
I tweaked a lot from other stuff. So like the minute stuff, if you looked at my sheet, my minutes would adjust on basically every single relevant guy. You know, obviously sometimes I would agree with the websites that I'd use, and then I'd, you know, if I was really, when I was really doing a good job, I'd do points per minutes on everybody too. And that was always trigger for me to figure out. But I did points per minutes on just about, you know, actually more, I'd say more so the relevant guys were changing situations. I don't need to change the points per minute on guys who, you know, have been in kind of a similar situation in the last like 5 games where there's teams without injuries running the same rotation over and over. I don't assume I could beat the websites on those guys.
And then from there, you're just generating a median fantasy point projection that we all see, you know, LeBron 39 points tonight.
Yeah, an average.
And yeah. And then use FC.
Yeah, I use Fantasy Cruncher. So for me, I use purely projections. I have a couple ways I can get around doing ownership stuff. I've never used ownership stuff for NBA. I'll look at it sometimes just to be like, I'm kind of low on this guy compared to the sites. Like, did I miss something here? And vice versa. If I'm way over a guy, I'm like, did I just, you know, inflate him too much? Maybe I missed like a guy's back or something, an injury, and the situation's changed. I use Fantasy Cruncher just because it gets me lineups fast. I don't need the Sims, or at least I didn't think I need the Sims and whatnot. I was just comfortable with my process. Now, whether that was the right one or not, I don't know, but I just felt comfortable with it and it worked. So I just continued it.
It is a little curious because I remember you were waging the war against the Sims, and right as the Sims are kind of really reaching their peak strength, you happen to retire. I mean, that seems like a little bit of a coincidence. Are you waving the white flag to the Sims, Travis?
You know that now that you say that, I'm going to announce my new site, brandsandsims.com. the next wave is here. No, I use the Sims for NFL. I use the Sims for NFL. But I still think that NBA is very beatable if you're doing your own projections. I don't worry about the Sims there. Again, I was winning actually in a 6-day sample of this NBA season. It wasn't because I was losing that I left. It felt like the right time to move on. And I've been thinking about it for a few years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can confirm that. I knew you were mulling it over. I've been talking about this. I was talking to someone that we both know, and he was telling me he thinks like 2 and 3 gamers small fields are starting to be unbeatable in the NBA. Do you have any thoughts on that?
That's actually fair. Well, funny you say that. I did use the Sims on the 2-game slate because I've never thought I was good at 2-game slates. 3-game slates I actually was okay with a couple years ago. But again, it's hard to differentiate too much on a 3-gamer. You really have to find like a perfect situation. And obviously I'm not unregistering all my games at 3 p.m. an hour before if there's not a great spot. I'm still playing regardless, but some slates you're just not going to find an edge. So I could see where the Sims would be helpful there and playing an ownership game there. But it really depends on the slate. Again, if there's a new situation, I think I could beat everybody on that. But if there's no new situation, then it's probably going to be an ownership game.
How often, because it sounds like the edge, like you said, is you were kind of originating your own stuff. You weren't just copying and pasting from the sites like a lot of people do, which is obviously going to impact the sim inputs and that stuff as well. Like, how often would you be like really far off from the market and then that actually go in your direction where it's like, no, actually the sites are the ones missing something?
Oh, I was right a lot. I was way off a lot too. Like, off the top of my head, I'm not great at like going back. It's like, oh, I did this and this. But I remember there's a guy named Rodion Kurucs. He's on the Nets for a couple of years. Terrible role player. And I remember one slate, he was like 0.5% owned. I had 65% of him. So like that stuff does happen.
Yeah.
Another one that was a little more clear. Like I remember NBA playoff. I think it might've been a live final, but it was game one. And I think Ayton, I think I've said this before, Ayton was like 28 minute projection. I had him like a 36 minutes just because it's a playoff game and he played like 38 minutes. So there are situations out there like that. You know, the sites, ETR and whatnot, Stochastic, they've got a lot better over the years, obviously, but they still make mistakes. You just have to work a little harder to find them.
Yeah, I've looked at Travis's lineups over the years, and you'll definitely see, like, even not these, you know, crazy 0.5% owned guys. You'll see just like Carl Anthony Towns is 3% owned. He's got 50% of them. It's like, why is he that much higher on Carl Anthony Towns, you know? And so the 0.5% owned guys too, it'd be interesting to see how that would work if, like, you could pop, you know, Travis's brain into the Sims, you know, the computer, and see what does. I mean, it would probably still give you 65%, but it might, like, from like a portfolio standpoint, you might not need that many combos if you're doing 150. But it still would probably be somewhere around 65, assuming he would be right. What about, I'm interested, we're kind of bouncing around here, but before I forget, what do you think about correlations in NBA?
That one I've never been great at, because it's, on one hand, usually only one guy can get fantasy points per play. Yeah, you'll get assists and points sometimes. But on the other hand, there are really strong minute correlations. And then you go into things like overtime and whatnot. I'm not as negative about correlation as some people are. I'll make groups sometimes, but it's mainly minutes correlation stuff. Like, you know, center A is a really good play, but center B is also solid because they're in a platoon. Like, I'm not going to play those two guys together. But I don't really do that very often. I don't do any correlation stuff, really. And I know that's probably that's not a normal thing.
I don't know. I think that's probably more normal than not. It's just, I just think it's a debate amongst people who actually do mess with it, whether it's actually more negative or more positive, which ones are positive. I think there's some obvious ones like backup center stuff, yeah, you know, where it's just like directly taking. But yeah, I know the reason I ask is Yuta talks about it all the time on his videos and stuff. So he's big on correlations in the NBA, where I've always kind of just generally seen it more as a negative.
It's specific. It's got to be specific. Like, the center was the most obvious one, because you'll see both centers owned on certain slates. I would say another one that I think is okay, where, like, some people won't want maybe Tatum and Brown on Boston, but if they're in a big game, they're going to play more minutes. So I don't mind it. So I don't have a huge opinion on it.
When you were like doing all your own kind of individual research and clearly keeping tabs on these teams, rotations, minute stuff, like, what was your, are you logging this in a notebook? Is this your own sheet? Like, how are you actually keeping this, or is it just all in your head?
It's in my head. I've thought many times where I would love to have an organized way where, like, I could write down my notes from the previous day and then I could go back to be like, oh yeah, this happened. I'm just not very good at that kind of stuff. I'd keep it in my head. And again, I was so locked in that I could keep it in my head and do a pretty good job of that. I know it seems overwhelming. And now if I try to do that, I would get destroyed, because I got too many things going on now. You know, it's a lot easier when you're unmarried and, you know, you have very few obligations. But now, you know, I coach basketball, I have two kids. I can't do that anymore. It's overwhelming.
I mean, hearing you kind of describe it, it makes sense to me why it feels like such an all or nothing thing for you, right? It's not like you could just like catch up of like, oh, I'm going to go take notes on these usage minutes things, and that I can just like easily shortcut that. For you, it's just like, I'm either all the way in or just all the way out. Like, it sounds like you can't even fathom doing your process in 40 hours a week instead of 80.
It would be a struggle. Could I still end doing 40? I'm sure I could, but I wouldn't do as well. And then I'd probably have some down swings where I'm questioning myself. And I just don't want to get to that place. You know, everybody's been there when you're downswinging, you think it's the end of the world and you think that you lost your edge. I'm over that. I'm over these NBA swings. They're gnarly. Even last year I had, I think after January, I lost a decent amount of chunk in NBA, and it coincided with when I took over as the head coach of the varsity team as the interim, because we had issues with our coaches. So I took over and I tried to balance the two, and it was impossible. And that kind of also led to what you said, like it's all or nothing for me. I'm just not as good on fewer hours. You know, it's kind of it's an unfortunate thing to say, you know, because we'd all like to spend 10 hours and make tons of money, but I just can't with my style.
Yeah, that's I was just gonna say. It makes perfect sense to me because it's the style, right, Pete? Like, what's he gonna? What I mean, he has nothing to fall back on. If you think about it, like he has to kind of do what he's always been doing to get the edge over the competition, because it's not like he's coding out, you know, all his ideas and he can just press a button and the time he spends coding is the time he spends printing, you know, money. It's what he was describing in the beginning of the show. Right. And which is just, he's just got to put the hours in to get that edge.
So is coaching basketball, does that kind of scratch your both basketball and kind of competitive itch? Is that filling that void for you?
100%. And I enjoy working with the kids and helping them out as well. So it's a perfect role for me post-retirement, if you want to say that. It takes a lot of hours too. Like it's actually insane how many hours these coaches work. And luckily for that regard, I'm not the head coach anymore. I'm just assisting now. So it's less time commitment, but it does. I probably put 20 hours a week. So it's a pretty decent commitment too. And that's just going to practice and stuff. I obviously think about it a lot more than that. So it's a perfect little segue.
What was your background or relationship with basketball before NBA DFS? Did you play? Did you coach before that? Like, where does all of your basketball history interweave?
So I've only coached, this is my third season coaching. This is a new thing. So that kind of coincides with when I probably started talking to Brian initially, like, I'm not sure how long I want to do this, because coaching was always my long-term goal. I just didn't have the time. You know, you can't put 80 hours a week doing this and coach. It's not possible. So I only played through my JV year. I played pickup basketball and whatnot, but I've always been into the advanced analytics of basketball ever since I was 15, 16 years old. I'm not as much into it now as I used to be. I used to nerd out and all this stuff. But I've always just been into basketball.
Are you doing any like data collection for your teams, looking at other stuff, trying to find, you know, weaknesses through data? Like, are you applying any of your DFS principles to real life coaching?
Yeah, I actually did. Weirdly enough, I built like a little model that showed why we're having issues before. And it basically said that, you know, some of our players that have been playing 25 minutes a game should not have been playing more than 5 minutes based on what I saw.
Oh, God. This model is going to have some tough parent-teacher conference conversations.
Yeah. It led to some really tough conversations. And unfortunately, you know, after I took over, the team started doing a lot better. So my decisions were the right one, you know, based on results. Obviously, we're not results-based industry here. Our first 20 games, we were the 32nd team in the county, which, you know, is San Diego's a big area, so it's not too bad. But after I took over, we were a top 10 team. So things worked. Data goes a long way. You can't argue with data.
That's pretty cool.
Is this the plan going forward then? You're just going to be a dad and a coach?
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty nice lifestyle, actually. You know, and with coaching, you can make it as many hours as you want. I could go 70 hours a week and, easily if I wanted to. That's not what I want to do, though. I'm going to try to be a decent dad. I don't know how people have multiple kids and play DFS full time. It seems wild to me. But that's my plan going forward.
Looks like we got some of the petty fans in the chat. I'm trying to, sift through troll questions.
There's a lot of trolling, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we got the petty Glazers in the chat as well. You coach high school basketball, so you probably know what the term glaze means.
I know it all now.
Okay.
I'm very hip now.
Yeah, and then Brian is trying to save the very youth of America that you are perhaps trying to save via your coaching as well.
What is he doing?
I'm beating them in Madden. That's how I'm going about it. teaching them a lesson.
I'm just laughing because Betty's just like, I don't know how anyone juggles all these things in their life, playing all this DFS, and Brian's like, I'm ranked top 20 in the world at Madden right now as well.
That's actually fascinating. I actually heard about that a couple weeks ago, and I wasn't sure if somebody misheard. Are you actually ranked top 20 in Madden, the current version?
Yeah, I was. They just reset after the month started.
Is Madden as popular as it used to be? That seems like a pretty insane accomplishment.
Well, I used to be really good.
Okay. I mean, you're still really good.
So I could do it before, and I was just, for some reason, I was watching YouTube. I'm like, I'm going to beat these young fuckers. So I bought an Xbox. I haven't played video games in like 10, 12, 15 years.
Is it all everybody doing the same strategy, or is there still mechanics to it where if you can move your stick a little better than everybody else, you're going to be better?
It's pretty similar. It's actually a little more complex than it was back in the mid 2000s. It's cause there's like more coverage options and stuff like that. I mean, the company of EA has had a lot of problems, in my opinion, over the last, so there's problems with the game. I feel like it's a little more arcadey.
Okay.
Like Neil's in chat, and he was telling me, like, I heard, like, if you play Madden, you'd be good at, like, really coaching. And I feel like, I mean, I know that's kind of ridiculous to say, but I feel like the old version of Madden kind of was, but this new one, you definitely have to know a lot about the game and stuff like that. But like, clock management's very arcadey now. Was more realistic before. There's a lot more coverages now, though, too, which teaches you more about how, you know, the game actually works. But yeah, you have to have good hand-eye coordination and know everything. And I mean, are you good at video games? Like, I know you play like COD or something, right? Like,
yeah, I was, the new Warzone just came out, so I was actually playing right before this. So the nice thing about not playing NBA, I can play COD all I want now. No, I've played games forever. I used to play like Warcraft 3. I was pretty good at Warcraft 3. That was like my gaming peak when I was young. I'm decent at COD. I still play more than the average 35-year-old probably plays games.
Yeah. So like if I played it, I usually get in the top. So like NHL hockey, like in I played that back in the day. That used to be a really good game. I got pretty high that. What else did I get high in? I don't know. But I just didn't play video games for so long. And then when I played again, I didn't like getting beat by these youngsters, and they were saying ass and glaze too much.
I'm sure you're an absolute menace on the voice chat. These poor kids. Oh, that's what I was hoping.
Yeah,
I don't have a headset. If I did, maybe I'd put one on. But yeah, you can hear them through the speakers, right? Like what they say. And so they're not very happy with me. They're not very happy with me. And they question my sexual identity quite a bit. I don't know. It's pretty funny. And then Davis tells me, he's like, you know, everyone is like 40 years old, dude. You're not beating any kids.
Yeah, I guess Madden's probably an older demographic.
Well, it's LeBron and Bryant. You know, those are the people running the game.
Yeah, pretty sure I beat LeBron.
Top 20 in a game with 30 guys.
No, they have like 500,000 people searching for games or something, it says on there.
Well, excuse me.
So Brian, but hearing kind of what Petty said and the fact that it does sound like you have some time in your schedule, have you considered playing less Madden and maybe watching some fucking NBA for once in your life?
Nah, it's time to take over the new brain.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know how he did it for as long as he did, honestly. Like, I feel like it's a young man's thing. I used to watch a ton of sports, Pete, a ton of sports. And I'm older than you guys. So like if DFS was super popular back during the poker days, I don't know, maybe I would have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Petty. He's right.
Can you give, so you know, you're on the way out, as far as I know, you're not writing a tell-all, you know, paid ebook or doing a course for in-game syndicate. Can you give the people some little nuggets? Can you throw some of the good stuff out now that you're on your way out? You know, a little secret sauce.
Obviously, what can I say?
Don't give away too much.
It's hard because I don't know what I would. Again, a lot of my edge is just knowing stuff. Like I can't really say like go watch, go look at popcorn. Nobody wants to do that, it seems. What I do is very simple. I look at popcorn a lot. I watch a lot of games. I put a lot of time into it. Nobody wants to do that, though. Like 80 hours a week, nobody wants to play 80 hours a weekend.
Let me phrase it this way.
You're taking like these projections, right, from ETR or whatever, and going like, this is wrong.
Yeah. So again, my process is very simple. I know some people who aggregate a million sites. I'll tell you what I did this year. I used ETR only. In the past, I used Stochastic. I used BBM. I used million sites. But this year, I just kept it simple because I don't need 100 different inputs. And I would just change values based on that. You know, simple stuff would be like, again, if it spreads higher, I would adjust the minutes down a little bit more because of blowout risk. If guys are going to play on blowout, I would kill that spread adjustment and keep them at the minutes I thought they'd play. I look at salary movement a lot. If a guy's salary has gone down a lot over the last couple of weeks, I'd figure out, is that a changed role? Is minutes down due to foul trouble? What is going on exactly? So, you know, I remember last year, John Collins got down to like 5K. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's too low. He's been playing like shit for the last 2 weeks, but eventually he's going to play well. In the NBA, when guys play well, coaches will ride the hot hand offense. So a guy who's projected like John Collins, you know, he's starting, maybe he's projected 24 minutes or like a bad center, 24 minutes. All of a sudden he plays well. His PPM goes up. His minutes go up. And all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, a 24-minute guy at one PPM is playing 30 minutes. All of a sudden he's probably playing at 1.3 rate or something. That's a huge smash. Nobody wants to play those guys because you'll look stupid often on those guys. That's how you win the GPPs. You know, people like, do you fade chalk? No, I don't fade the chalk. I'll still play the chalk, but these low-owned guys that nobody wants that are underpriced that eventually will go off, those are the guys you'll play. So you'll see, like if you looked at five slates in a row of a certain guy, you might see me play the same guy over and over and over. I'll look stupid four times, but that fifth time I'll hit. And then those are days where I have the huge days that'll, you know, make my month.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this stuff a little bit more. I don't play salary cap DFS, but I've been drafting NBA teams on Underdog, and I've been doing it since the season started, and I know nothing about NBA. So I'm kind of like learning on the fly, but like one of the things that's been in my head all the time, because you're often drafting with Q tag uncertainty leading up to lock. You can't wait until all the things are in before you draft, like then you'll get like three teams in. And so I've been thinking about those like conditional projections, right? Like if this thing doesn't happen, like my current ranks are probably going to get shuffled around in a big way. And I assume you're having to do a little bit of that, even knowing like what the final starting lineups are or whatever, where it's like, if this game paces up, if this guy, you are then kind of doing some adjustment to what that means for the rest of the projection set.
Yeah. So that's a good question. You know, let's say LeBron is questionable, right? I'll get Anthony Davis's, I'll project his, you know, his minutes out, I'll project his points per minute. And from there, I'll look at the difference between his, with LeBron out and LeBron in projections, and then I'll put a percentage on what chance I think he's out. Now, I'm not great at that. I'm not like, I don't look at news all day like some guys. I don't have a tweet deck that's perfect. So usually I just do like 50-50 on guys I don't know very well. Now, there's certain guys that, you know, if there's a late question mark, like a guy comes on the report out of nowhere, those guys are more likely to be out. But if it's someone like Anthony Davis who in previous years is questionable every single time, I'll give a lot less percentage to a guy like him. And from there, like if there's like a 5-point difference between LeBron out, LeBron in for 80, and it's 50-50, I'll just give him 2.5 extra points. And then obviously if I get news, I'll already have his new projection made, which saves time.
And that to me starts to make sense of where you do really have the edge in the micro, right? Because these providers, they have to make assumptions for their entire subscriber base, and they're trying to be as directionally accurate as possible. But that generality means that there's going to be some micro misses, and that if you want to go in there and fly the comments and be like, I don't care if I'm wrong in this spot, like I know this, I'm going to be able to tweak this in the way the site will never be able to, because maybe it blows up a bunch of other domino effect or whatever.
100%. Yeah, I mean, the sites are trying to project for the median, right? So I remember like this happened last night. Like I've been doing like Underdog and Prize Picks just like super casually. I don't do any my own research. I just look at websites and put it in and just have a little sweat, right? And I remember last night I put in lineups without even looking at guys questionable right now. So I had a bunch of Phoenix unders, and then I look at the thing and I see Beal gets ruled out. I'm like, well, shit, I didn't even factor that in. The sites didn't factor that in either. They had Beal in. So it's just stuff like that, that the sites, you know, you have to factor in on your own.
You do all this pregame workout, pregame work. I think probably one of the biggest benefits, maybe definitely more so in years past, because the NBA news is coming out pretty decent actually for NBA.
Yep, it's been good.
Definitely this year, last 2 years probably.
Yep.
But Pete, you're not a huge NBA guy. Right before lock is like crunch time. It's huge. And for me, I'll struggle where Beal gets ruled out. I know it was a late game yesterday, but let's say it wasn't. And now I have to go, oh shit, okay, he's out. Let's see. Okay, who's getting these minutes? Because I can't wait for it to be updated. Where I imagine for you, you're just boom, 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 rerun your optimizer.
I already have it done. Unless this is a random guy getting ruled out, I already have everything done on all these questionable guys. You know, I always work on the teams that have no questionable guys first. And then when I ran out of those teams, I go to the questionable teams and hammer those guys out. And then, you know, from there, like if there's a guy ruled out, five is four lock, or maybe five is kind of cutting close, but like say seven or eight, I know I'm going to have an edge on everybody. Cause I you know, even if it's a random guy, cause I know what's going to happen. I know who's going to have the ball. I have good. I obviously can't put a perfect projection out in 2 or 3 minutes, but I can give a rough idea of who's going to benefit the most. And from there, with Fantasy Cruncher, I have the speed advantage as well on a lot of people, where I could just rip the lineup, 150 lineups out in 2 minutes. So those situations, like, they're super stressful. Don't get me wrong, but I know that it's more stressful for everybody else. You know, it's good for me. And that happened at the DraftKings final that I won. 3 years ago, there was a bunch of late news with like 20 minutes to go. I remember on my, I was on my touchpad on my laptop in my room. I was sweating bullets. I was super concerned because I was hand building everything. I was trying to handle everything into draft.
How many teams did you have?
I had five.
Okay.
So I used Fantasy Cruncher, but I had to manually type in everybody's name because I think the CSV wasn't working to put them in. And I think I got everything with like a minute and a half left. Because there was so much news. There was like Kyrie got ruled. A bunch of guys got ruled out. But the guys that benefited most, there was Nembhard. I think Haliburton got ruled out late. Nembhard did really well. Kyrie got ruled out. Josh Green, who nobody had on the radar because he's usually a third, fourth option. He was a secondary ball handler. He crushed for me. And just that spot was perfect for me. And I ended up winning because of those guys.
What about, let's say, you do all this work. It's 7 minutes before lock, 15 minutes before lock. Are you already done and you're just waiting for any news at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I'm, especially when I was putting the most hours in, like I'm ready for whatever. Cause obviously you want to be prepared for shit in the fan, and shit will hit the fan. Not as much in the last couple of years, as you said. I think the NBA made some rules where if your injury reports aren't good enough, they'll fine you. Yeah. Teams have got a lot better about it. But yeah, especially 2 or 3 years ago, you need to be ready for that late news. You can't be working on, you know, the random questionable guy who's in the late game with 15 minutes to go and all of a sudden someone gets ruled out.
What like your style of play, obviously I'm guessing you had success at various types of tournaments and structures, but did your stuff lend itself better in like small field, the large field stuff? Did you notice any trends with what you were better at?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My style should theoretically be better in a winner take all because I get pretty contrarian especially for the high stakes guys. Most of them kind of fly kind of close to the chalk and play solid. I can get pretty weird. So you'd think that winner take all would be the best and maybe they were still, but I did really well the small fields too, especially there used to be a tournament on FanDuel called the Beast. That was a winner take all 5K. I guess it's still winner take all, but it's a small field with six guys. And I remember my ROI was really high in that because a lot of guys duped playing the same lineup. Or they played this very similar. They had one-offs against each other where I'd be like three or four guys. So if my team did well, nobody had a chance most nights against me. It's hard to say.
A similar setup in like that I hear like with the Thunderdome for like NFL stuff too. When I see like Leone playing it and having success where everybody has like the same version of a lineup and then just he has three or four different pieces, you're going to have a lot of bad weeks, but your good weeks mean you ship.
100%. And obviously you can't just go, you know, look at the top line and go three or four crazy guys. You still have to have solid guys, but NFL Thunderdome, I think it's a little more guys though, right? Like what, 20, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think you're right. Was it like 20 to 40, Brian?
But they pay more guys. Like NBA Thunderdome usually is six to eight guys, but they pay two guys. So it's not as winner take all. Like whereas NFL Thunderdome, I'm guessing they pay at least half.
I think they pay three. I think they pay at least top three in there.
Yeah, when top three of 20 is still pretty top heavy, though.
Yeah.
Better than top two.
It's funny because, like, what you're describing in that type of contest and that kind of dynamic is really what happens in these underdog contests where it's, you know, six rounds, six players, 36 players are drafted. Everybody gets funneled to the same top 36 guys. And if you're just willing to get a little different, a little bit off the board, like, yeah, a week like last week where all the chalk top guys hit, like, you lose. But on the weeks where a few of those other guys bubble up and you're just slightly different, it's a huge edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, if you have the knowledge to get different, and like, if your projections are close to these websites, which were really good, but you're very different, you're going to make a lot of money. Even if, again, your projections are worse overall, but you're very different. That has a lot of value in it. Because, again, when the sites, you know, wrong may not be the right word, but when the site's guys do poorly and you're, you know, slightly different guys do well, not only are your lineups have more projection, but they also are constructed differently naturally. And I think that's also a reason why I had a lot of success, where a lot of guys would go, you know, they would go stars and scrubs often. That's a lot of the times what the DraftKings lineups or the FanDuel lineups turn into, stars and scrubs naturally based on the optimizers. I'm not sure if that's as prevalent now with Sims, but that's how it used to be. And my lineups are generally a lot more mid-tier guys, just because I project guys differently.
I was going to ask you about that. How much, so you could pump your custom projections into an optimizer, and then, you know, you might not like what you see. So, like, how much were you going, that's just too much Crooks, that's just too much Carl Anthony Towns, I got to get below that?
Yeah, I mean, it does get uncomfortable, especially because, again, I don't use ownership, but I look at it. So there are times where I see my guy, I'm like, well, shit, this is going to be really did I really fuck this up? And there'll be nights where, you know, watching the games, I'm like, yeah, I completely botched this. But you have to be okay with that. I noticed that. Now, obviously, I can't say for sure, but the nights where I was most uncomfortable with my lineups are the nights I did the best. You know, if I had to rate the two against each other, those are definitely the nights I do better. You know, when you're comfortable, everybody's probably comfortable with their lineups, and that's not a good place to be.
Dan talks about that quite a bit, actually, in every tenor. That, you know, because that's a kind of an old poker analogy, right? Because, yeah, if you're not in uncomfortable situations, well, then your opponent isn't either.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And that was kind of, I was very, I was a nit in poker. You know, I was a guy who played 24 tables at once. So I played by the book a lot. And I remember one time, like, I made a play on one of my friends and I laugh about it after. I told him, like I showed him my hand. He's like, you would never, ever, ever do that. Like, that was like super effective. Actually, like, maybe I should start doing this a little more. And the play made no sense. But again, if a guy who plays by the book makes a play that makes no sense, or like maybe he has one or two hands possible, he probably has those one or two hands. So being uncomfortable, making uncomfortable plays usually goes a long way.
Yeah. I mean, it works the other way too. Like when you're playing cards and someone makes a big bet into you, you know, folding feels real comfortable. You know, you don't have to make that big call. And yeah, it's like, well, are you folding too much here? And then you might have to, you know, even raise in that situation sometimes, but it's really uncomfortable. I just looked up the Thunderdome this week's 30 players, seven paid, seven out of 30 paid. That's a lot.
Like 21%. So that's less than the NBA, you know, paying two guys for eight still. And NBA doesn't even run Thunderdome that often. I'm pretty sure it's must fill now.
That's back in the day. They used to do a lot of those without guaranteeing them. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably one of the reasons why Thunderdome doesn't run anymore, or because I used to play it every day. 2-3 years ago, but I just stopped playing when they paid out multiple people. And same with the Beast. I stopped playing eventually because I think I got a little too vocal about, you know, guys duping each other. And then all of a sudden certain guys stopped duping each other.
I was going to ask you that. Did you ever play three mans seriously?
No, I really seriously wanted to get into it a few times. But I heard too many stories and I don't want to have to worry about guys colluding against me, which I'm pretty sure guys would collude against me. So, I didn't put serious effort into it. I was content with my GBP play and that was that.
It almost has to happen. Like I cannot prove it, but I'm telling you, back in the poker days, if you played 5-10 or higher shorthanded, lots of dudes were on IM. I was never, but like, I can't prove it, but a lot of dudes were on AIM back in the day, and soft playing the shit out of each other, but playing you as hard as they fucking can. And it's just it's just gambling. Like, you have to protect yourself. And so, like, three mans, I think Pete, we've done a good job talking about three mans over the years, but that's definitely a spot where I would probably pass.
Yeah. It's even if you're not getting cheated, you have that in the back of your head, and that's not a fun place to be. You know what I mean? And if these guys are even talking to you, even if they're not like saying like, oh, how do you feel about this guy? Oh, you know, maybe they might even let it slip like, hey, you know, ETR hasn't been as good lately. So, you know, the guy will tweak it. And I don't know. It just feels like there's guys who should be duping a lot in the three man because they play very similar, but then they never end up duping. It doesn't make any sense.
I want to follow up quickly on the Fantasy Cruncher thing. So you're making your lineups. You know, I know you look at ownership. We just talked about that. But are you like just putting in like three uniques? Give me 150, ship.
Yeah. So it's funny. I want to give you guys tidbits. I don't want to give you like everything. There's one thing I'm not going to give because, you know, there's a couple guys who've helped me, you know, over the years, you know, in different ways where I'd rather give them the best stuff. But that's a good question. I usually use the rule of 10. So whatever was closest to 10 from my lineup one to 150, that's what unique I'd use. So let's say lineup one is 307 and lineup 150 is 290 on a four unique. I probably need to go to at least three unique, maybe even two. Does that make sense? I feel like I didn't explain it very well.
Yeah. So you look at your first and last lineup.
First and last lineup. If there's a 10 difference between lineup one and lineup 150, that's a good amount of uniques.
If there's a 10 man difference, you say
10 projection difference.
Okay. So yeah. Off the optimal, essentially.
Off of your optimal. Yeah. That's my sweet spot.
Okay.
And then you lower that as the slate goes on and on, because obviously if you're going four unique and then there's big news that comes out and you go four unique again, your lineups might get really, really screwed up with Fantasy Cruncher because, you know, your lineup one might change. Obviously the lineup two is like, oh, I can't go that combination again. I have to completely change my lineup to make it four unique against lineup one. So I lower my uniques as the slate goes on.
That makes a lot of sense, the strategy, because just from like a portfolio standpoint, if you have the same EV, so like let's say his 150 lineup was equal to his first, even though of course that can't be true. Let's just say it was. Well, then you could just make them all different. It doesn't matter because it's the projection's all the same. So that's pretty good advice. 10 off the optimal. So like usually in NBA, let's say there's like 300 points projected. So that's what, like 3% off the optimal?
Yeah.
Essentially 3.5%.
3.3.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. We've talked about this too on Endgame, and we said 5%.
Yeah. My style's not perfect. So 5% might be the perfect way to go. It's just where I felt comfortable.
It was just not ballpark though. So like you'd have to actually go in and study it. I was just ballparking it, but yeah.
So just to kind of put a box, you guys are saying that in general, you're too far off the board if you're say more than 5% off the optimal with the majority of your lineups.
No, because it depends on the night, I would assume.
Keep in mind also, I think I'm more naturally contrarian. So my optimal one is different than your optimal one. Your optimal one might be more chalky. So your 5 points might be the same as my 3.3. Or sorry, my
right.
Your 5% might be the same as my 3.3%.
You probably shouldn't even be putting that optimal in the field, Pete. Like if you're just going to ETR and pressing enter on Fantasy Cruncher, that lineup's going to be duped like 72 times.
Yeah.
So like but his isn't because he's doing his own stuff. So for him, it makes a lot of sense. But like what you'd probably want to do is make a shit ton of lineups if you're using ETRs, which is what most people do these days, and then maybe make a floor of like 5% off the optimal for that night, or you know, somewhere around there, depending, and based on like time, how much time you have left and how many lineups your product, whatever it is, if you make your own or use SaberSim or whatever, how many they're making. Cause like if you go like, let's say you go 3%, you go closer to Petty's number, it might only make you 1,000 lineups or something to like look through. You might want more than that to look through. So you might want to drop that number.
What's the difference in looking at percent off optimal and your own uniques versus looking at the product ownership of that same set?
I mean, there's different product ownership is different because if you get like a 1% owned guy, it's going to totally change
right
the product.
But I mean, I guess I'm just, I assume it's like the whole thing with all of this, right? Is you're trying to figure how unique can I get without sacrificing too much. I'm just wondering, what are the difference in those methodologies?
I mean, they're totally, well, first of all, he's making his own stuff. Mm-hmm. So that changes everything. Right. And so like, he doesn't even need to get that different. But like I said, from a, just like a, in, you know, investment point of view, if in his mind, the lineups are the same projection, there's literally no difference putting 8 uniques or 1 unique. It's basically the same outcome.
Yep.
So why not? Well, if you're going to enter 2 lineups, you should just enter the one lineup that's projected for 285 and this other lineup that's projected for 285. That's completely different than the first. Mm-hmm. Like if you're making your own projections, where like if you're doing an ownership adjustment or cutoff, that is that's going to just give you a completely different outcome than him, because you're not using his projections. And it depends how you adjust for ownership, Pete. Like what are you imagining?
Well, I'm just saying, I feel like that would allow Travis to know, like, is this a night that I'm on what a lot of the field is on, looking at my, you know, product ownership for these lineups versus, oh no, no, my stuff is so different tonight that I'm just going to jam the best version of my lineups because it's already controlled.
Okay. So I think you're confusing risk versus edge, mm-hmm. where just going multiple uniques and you have the same projection is a risk. You want to lower right. your risk. If you're adjusting for ownership, you're making an EV play, saying like, I am now going to gain an edge on the field by adjusting my combos based on what my opponents are going to do.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Any other thoughts there, Petty?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting conversation. It's one of those things I never looked at product ownership or any of that stuff. So it's not really something I have a lot of experience with. So it would take me a lot longer to formulate an answer.
What who are, as you are on your way out of the NBA DFS world, who are some of the top crushers there that you won't miss having to battle against?
I mean, I really don't follow the scene that much. No, there are good players. I mean, okay. I always go old school, but again, I haven't followed the scene that much in the last 2-3 years. So I always have, you know, Mazo, Raging Phillip, that combo.
Yeah.
Talk about colluding guys back in the day. Chet Abisk and I can't remember his. Another combo that's gray
shit.
Area.
Chet, who's Chet Abisk's?
Kobe for MVP is his other name.
Oh, that might be it. Yeah.
That's his other site name. I don't remember his partner. See, I can't remember who's partnered who anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of young or new guys that are coming up that I couldn't even tell you how they play anymore.
Kobe MVP.
That's his. I'm pretty sure that's the same guy.
Okay.
Is that two different guys? Am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong.
I think those are the two names. Actually,
they're the same guy, but they're two different guys.
Right.
When you mention the partner stuff, like even outside of the soft collusion type thing, do you think that stuff happens because they're basically saying like, hey, we're going to do the same amount of work Petty Theft's doing, but we're going to split it up and combine, like you cover these games, I cover these. And it basically reduces the workload while giving you the same, you know, information that you need to be successful.
It'd be pretty smart to do. Maybe I'd still be around if I split my work week and who wants to be my other half? We'll do 40 a piece. I'm coming back.
Well, they could pay maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they do. I don't know. Again, I Raging Phillip and Maslow definitely got caught colluding in golf. They got banned briefly for that. Kobe and Chetta, I don't know if they actually collude. I just know they play very similarly. They've done it for years, so I don't know.
I don't think they needed to collude, man. Those guys, they're pretty damn good.
They're good. They're very good. But maybe it's what Pete said, though. Maybe they share the work, so like, you know, they can't just have like, hey, you play one day, then I'll play another day, right? Yeah, maybe they just split the work and split their profits.
What about this? Name some content providers you like
ETR
or that you don't like. That's funner.
Don't like?
Sure, why not?
I mean, I don't know most of the content providers. I'm sure there's a lot of shit out there.
So Stochastic, ETR, RunPierre, SaberSim, Ship It Nation.
Hang on, yeah, let me reframe that. Are you on Team RunPierre or Team Ship It Nation?
I like guys in both.
Oh, don't. You're on your way out.
I'll tell you what, for NBA, I would not use either. For NBA, I would not use either. Again, I think ETR is really good. Stochastic is solid. SaberSim, I don't think is very good for NBA. I hate to say it because I like the guy SaberSim, but I don't like their NBA product. It drives me nuts when I try to use it. But their NFL is really good. Who else is out there? BBM used to be really good. I kind of miss the old BBM days. I don't know why they gave up and they went just pure season long because they had, I feel like, a pretty good hold on the market for a while.
Who's BBM? When I first why started playing fantasy basketball in like 2009, I was using Basketball Monster when it was
Basketball Monster.
Justin Fan. It was so good.
I still use it, not for the projections, but like it is so clean to see injuries and whatnot. I still love looking at the site. Maybe it's just a nostalgia thing for me. But I feel like BBM was the first big thing. And I know all the new guys now complain like, oh, you know, people made their money back in the day. We could just put BBM opt to one and make money. And you probably could to some extent. But being a ball knower back then definitely had a lot of value.
Yeah. That you also couldn't like put your CSV in back then. Like you had to hand put lineups in.
Don't get me started. I remember when I lived in Chicago, all my buddies went to Poorhouse. It's an old town. I'm sure you know, you've been there, Brian. They had a great NFL setup. And I remember I was late because it took me 3 hours to hand put in 150 lineups in the NFL. It was an absolute – I never did that again after that. It was the worst idea ever. Never again.
What would be your advice then? You said ETR stuff is really good. We know that they are a market mover, a market maker with all of their stuff. So how do you think through the dynamic of using the best if everyone else is using the best?
Well, that's the problem, right? I don't think anybody who's listening to the show and is like, I'm going to start making my own projections now. Like, you can't just wake up and do that one day, right? So you still need baselines. I mean, heck, I use baselines still, right? I change just about everything, but there's still some baselines I'll use. And if I'm confused on a spot, you know, I usually will probably give ETR the credit where they're right. I should completely lost my train of thought. Where I was going with that?
I was asking, like, if we recognize this dynamic that they're the best baseline, but then everyone's using that, then like, how do you still succeed in using that baseline?
That kind of goes against my point where being different has value. I see. It's hard, right? Again, if you don't have 80 hours a week, and I assume most people don't, I would strongly suggest people just focus on the teams with new dynamics. I think instead of focusing on an eight game slate and all 16 teams, which I used to do, focus on the four teams that have a different dynamic. Try to figure out how the points per minute change, how the minutes change. That's how I would get different from ETR.
Basically, where the projections, the assumptions that ETR is making are the most fragile.
Yes. Assumptions are always the most fragile, especially on new situations. Even like one game after new situations, ETR is not going to be perfect. But after a few games of the same situation, ETR is pretty solid by that point. It's going to be hard to gain the edge against them.
What about more broadly? Like, what do you think of DFS 5 years now? What do you think of the content game now? Where do you see it all?
I don't know. The content game seems kind of like we're at an impasse right now. I don't really see how it gets that much stronger. I don't see the incentive of like a really strong top player to go to content and improve projections, you know? So I don't see it. To me, betting is the future, and it has been for a while. I'm surprised that DFS is actually as strong as it is still. I thought DFS would be not dead by now by any means, but I thought it would be not 100K price, 100K to first on NBA most nights without NFL. I think stuff like Showdown really saved the product and brought a lot of new people in. Because while I think Showdown is definitely a shark, it's really easy to be a shark in. Like if you're a sim guy, it's really easy to get strong ROI in. I think it's just a perfect game type for casual Joe to just throw a game on. So I'm not very bullish on DFS long term, but it's proved me wrong. I thought it would be slowing down by now, big time.
Basically agree with all that. I think the content game though is going to get stronger in terms of like, there's only so many directions you can improve on, really. like I'm like, I don't think AI or like quantum computers or something is going to like come and solve the game. But I do think like you can get better.
YouTube titles say differently, Brian.
Maybe we should title ours that. But like, I do think like the tools will get better. You know, like maybe ownership projections will get better. Maybe projections will get better, but certainly the tools will get better.
So I will say, go ahead, Pete.
Oh, no, I was just going to say on that same thought, like I would love when I'm doing these drafts, like on ETR projections, if I had a set of 10 different conditional things, this guy's ruled out, spit me out a new set. This guy's in, but this guy's out. And it lets me like build like two or three different assumptions and then spits me out a projection set for that assumption. Like that doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to do from where we're at, but like that would be a huge leap in even what we have.
I will say I saw a product, over the NBA offseason that was pretty strong. I'm surprised the website never came out because it had some pretty good data on it. That was interesting. And I don't remember if I feel like they may have had that or like conditional stuff that you're talking about. Again, I'm not sure why it didn't come out, but now thinking back, maybe there is the ability to get stronger with the content stuff. But again, the stronger the content gets, the harder it's going to be to win. This is what happened in poker, right? Everybody became an end boss by the end. Like if I went to poker now with my knowledge back in when I played, 12 years ago, I'd get smoked at the same levels because everybody's just so much stronger now. So yeah, I guess there really is the ability for content to get stronger and everybody gets stronger as well. I mean, I guess that's natural, right? There are new people still coming to the game and it's new young people too.
Yeah.
And also it depends on like how many people actually use it because there's a lot of dummies out there. And like they just don't even search out the best stuff. So like there's kind of an argument for a lot of these content providers to just not even bother improving their stuff because like they have to spend $100,000 in development and like but they don't get really any more people when you know just hiring Taylor Mathis will get you 50,000 extra subs or something, right? So like I do think it's going to improve. I'm just not sure how many bros are going to be signing up.
You gotta be ETR, right? And you gotta be way better than ETR too, probably, because you're already competing against a brand that's established.
Oh yeah, first mover
advantage. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, ETR is a problem, honestly, because they do good work, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, they're really good.
It would be better if they didn't. And but they're also, they have, Silva and Levitan, who are really popular, have a big following. So they get a lot of people using their stuff. So, and it raises the floor for all of us. But again, like the high, high level stuff we're talking, you're mentioning, I'd be interested to see how many people sign up.
Yeah. I'd be interested too. There's like a brand or Sims didn't come out. That would take in the market.
I saw a twinkle in your eyes when Brian mentioned Taylor Mathis. Did you have something you wanted to say about her?
She's popular lately. She's all over the place. Her crypto week or day on crypto was very interesting.
She's entered that character of the day territory where she just finds a way to be the main character for every single day or another. Yeah,
I don't know how she does it. Like she's definitely thirsty for clicks. I mean,
You want me to? I can tell you, Travis.
I have a pretty good idea. I have two pretty good ideas.
Could be anything.
She's pretty successful.
I know how she does it. I know exactly how she fucking does it.
It's remarkable how fast she ping pongs from one thing to the next thing.
The comments, by the way, if you just spend, a few minutes occasionally, if you're going to look at the pictures, scroll down, read the comments. It's like one of the greatest arguments against democracy that I've ever seen.
Simp nation in those comments.
Simping is incredible.
You thought the petty glazing was bad in here? You should see the glazing in those comments.
I mean, I can only imagine how much these OnlyFans people make, especially people who've been in it for a while.
Right. It's gotta be incredible. Yeah. It's
and it probably doesn't take 80 hours a week either to make that.
I bet you it takes way less. A couple photos and upload, you're good. It's a great job to have.
And then you could just play COD the rest of the day. It sounds
great. I'm sure that's what they're doing.
I'm sure the guys would love to simp on a Twitch COD as well for these girls.
Petty, anything else on your way out here that you'd like to mention? Any other parting shots, goodbyes? Shout out to your troll army in the chat.
Wait. Before one more question. Just so the audience knows, do you have any plans to join a site or maybe do some content that people can see in the future?
I don't see it. The only thing I've thought about doing is coaching for like an hour. Something, you know, low time commitment and stuff. It would just come to how much it would be. But I don't think that's very likely because I've had a lot of people ask if I do coaching and stuff, but I don't want to do the content stuff. I don't want to make my own projections. It takes too much time. But if I did do something, it'd be coaching for an hour, but it would be like, it would be at an amount where not many people would probably want to do it. So it would be low commitment.
Two times in the chat says he'll be back playing NBA DFS. I would bet my fucking life on it. What are the odds that Travis, do you think it's 0% that you will ever submit another NBA DFS lineup?
No, because I have a ticket to, I have a $2,500 ticket from that promo. So well, I have to submit one more.
I mean, just entering spending $750 or something on a $5 GPP that he just wants to sweat for the day and playing professionally.
I will say, I'll never say never. If I did play, I would try to qualify for a live final. So if you see me, it'll be like one or two lamps trying to qualify for a live final. I just don't see it happening this season. I don't care. Like last week, it's kind of hard. You know, when you first quit, you know, the first couple of days, especially, you know, I was addicted, maybe a bad word, but like I think about it a lot. But now I haven't thought about, you know, playing fantasies for a week now. I feel completely fine with it.
I will say that it feels like retiring is a like a good luck bump. Like everyone who retires like wins a big GPP like 2 weeks later. So I am officially announcing my retirement from DFS, Pete.
Okay.
And I might announce again every show until I win.
Yeah,
a big score.
Tell the fish stop getting there.
Who else? Ricky D. Is he retired?
RBX, Ricky D.
RBX is definitely different. He's the guy who retires, but then you see him next week in the lobby. I won't do that.
Okay. Can you leave some NFL though for the rest of us who are still committed to the game at DFS?
No.
Don't get. I got lucky one time. I'm not even sure how positive I am. Lifetime. It's not pretty. It's not free. You want me in the lobbies.
Brian, what do people need to check out on in-game this week?
We did a roundtable yesterday with Yuta, me, Nerdy, Davis, and Adam. That's our newest thing. We got Draft Caddy, too. People do BRs, rip yep. BRs. Oh, we got that 3-combo ownership now, Pete.
Is it up and working?
Mm-hmm. It's on settings in the newest one.
Awesome. I think I need to down. What is the Brian? What's the newest version?
Let me look.
I need to update that.
Yeah, you need to update. It's 2.26 looks like.
Okay. Yeah, definitely check that out. And for more BR stuff, I'm going to have my Deposit Kingdom video out tomorrow. I always use the in-game syndicate ownership numbers to help me kind of find the overlooked gems on the slate. We got the Shipcast tonight for the companion stream for Eagles Commanders. Denny Carter joining us for that. We'll have some pick-ems to sweat as well later. And then all my other DFS shows tomorrow, Block Party with Jam to Win and Off and On the Clock with the Badge Bros. But Petty, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I always be around to instigate and troll. Just let me know when there's some good drama.
Yeah, no, and if you hear about any, you know, send it our way. Yeah. Be the change you want to see in the world, Petty, like you were today, coming on the show and giving us some good DFS drama.
I love it. I'll be back.
All right, guys. Subscribe to the channel. You can catch this in audio form, as always, on the Lulz podcast feed, and we will see you guys next time on Lulz. Actually, we can announce our guest. We got our guest booked for next week. Pat Mayo is going to be coming on. Mm-hmm. One of our favorites. Got to always bring him on for his quarterly or so appearance. So can look forward to that next time on Lulz. Peace.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.